By any objective measure, Isaac Newton was a genius, one of the smartest human beings to ever walk on the face of the earth. He was a mathematician, a physicist, all around smart guy. And Isaac Newton was smart enough to get really, really rich. But he also nearly went bankrupt because of the decisions he made. Isaac Newton was a genius, but even he will understand that there are different skills involved when it comes to money. If you've been following along our series, you will know by now that there are a unique set of skills for making money to live, a different set of skills for growing that money and getting rich, however you might define that. And then there is a whole different set of skills for staying rich.
A moth talks is a dollar.
I define getting rich as the difference in the money you spend and the money you keep, right? So whatever is left that you haven't spent to me is what I think about when I think about being rich. So clearly there is a revenue side, the money you're keeping in, and then there is also, right, an expense side of the equation. So let's stay on the revenue side for a second. Let's talk about making money and growing your money. I want to start by saying, if you are just starting out or you're struggling to make basic ends meet, your focus should be on one thing and one thing only. You need to make more money. We've covered how to do that in prior episodes. So now let's say you have, followed our formula and you have focused on acquiring skills that are in high demand but low supply of talent, and now you're covering the basics. You're making ends meet, and now you want to focus on growing your money. There are a lot of investment options and things you can do that could help you grow your money. But history has shown, at least right now, right where we are, probably the most accessible and the most reliable way to grow your money is probably the stock market. Yes, there are other options as well, real estate, etc. But the data is just overwhelming. And all you need to do is look at who are the richest people of our time, and you will find that it is investing in companies, good companies, is a good, reliable, accessible way for the average person to grow their money. But I want to stress that, yes, you're now paying your basic bills and you're thinking about growing your money. You do need to try to accelerate the growth of your money. I think the OG Charlie Munger puts it best, the way you want to think about when you're starting to grow your money. Let me read you a quote from Charlie Munger. The first $100,000 is a bitch, but you got to do it. I don't care what you have to do. If it means walking everywhere and not eating anything that wasn't purchased with a coupon, find a way to get your hands on $100,000. After that, you can ease off the gas a little bit. You know, the irony is, when you don't have a lot of money and you are in that state, I can speak from personal experience. When you are broke, you go to bed waking up the next day thinking of ways to spend money. You are thinking about new Jordans to buy, new clothes, new this, new cars. You are always dreaming of ways to spend your money. And once you are on the growing your money path and you start making money, you go to bed and you wake up the next morning scared as hell. You're not thinking about spending money. You are thinking about all the ways you need to grow your money because you are scared to lose your money. And all you want to do is grow it. That is the mindset you want to take. Now, if you are with me and saying, yes, Amos, I do want to grow my money, where do you turn for advice about growing your money? Well, there is a $60 billion industry dedicated to giving you advice on how to manage and grow your money. Problem is, the financial advice industry should not exist. We should burn the whole thing down.
What?
Most of the advice that they will give you, the $60 billion industry, is downright scary, harmful, and sometimes even predatory. It is almost intentionally intimidating. The whole thing is a scam. A rule of thumb, any industry that uses jargon where you're like, why don't they just speak in plain English? It's because they are hiding something. This is why they keep using this confusing language to bamboozle you. You know, like, let's take something simple as, you know, the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, right? We all know what interest rates are and lowers them by percentage points or a fraction of a percent. But listen to this industry talk about the simple idea of raising interest rate.
Federal Reserve raising by 25 basis points to a new range of 4.5 to 4.75. This is the eighth straight hike by the Federal Reserve since March, up by a quarter to 4.5 to 4.75. The Federal Reserve sees ongoing increases as appropriate. So that phrase that some thought might come out remains in. The Fed is still en route to a level it calls a sufficiently restrictive level of the funds rate.
Did you catch the jargon there? Basis points. What the heck is basis points? They call it BIPs. Again, the industry is full of scam. Stay the heck away from it. The truth is, most of the advice you need is actually quite straightforward and very, very free. It should not cost you anything. So on the topic of growing your money, probably maybe one of the few people worth listening to is this professor named Pollack. You know, he argues that most of the advice you need for your financial life could fit on a 4x6 index card. And I agree with him. I want to touch on some of the points that he makes that makes perfect sense. The first one is pretty basic, no rocket science. Save 10 to 20% of your income. I get it. This advice may be aspirational for you. You may be saying, yes, I cannot save that much because I'm in debt or this, that, and the other. Got it. The point is, right, start saving and make your goal to get to about 10 to 20% of your income. Very straightforward. You do not need to pay anyone for that type of advice. The second advice is max out your 401k or equivalent, right? Which is your retirement funds, whether you work for yourself, own a 401k, basically, do your best to max that out. Again, this isn't church. This isn't the Ten Commandments. But again, the idea is put at least as much as your company will match. If your company says we will match the first 3%, 4%, that is free money. You should at least be doing that. And then aspire to max out the 401k. It's not written in stone. It is aspirational. Now, what you do with that money you're putting away is also very important. Take that money and put it in a low-cost index fund. Please keep that money away from your financial advisor, the one who wants to tell you how he is going to beat the market. He's telling you, why are you putting it in this boring, low-cost index fund? I've got this sophisticated thing and strategies here that will beat the market. No, he or she is lying. Do not listen to them. Be even more suspicious when they tell you my services are free. Do you work for free? No one's services are free. You are paying for this bad advice you're getting. And this is not a matter of opinion. In 2022, the New York Times did a study of all 2,132 firms that were actively managing their money. Do you know how many of them over the last 5 years beat the index? Exactly zero. Not one of the 2132 firms that we have here in the United States could beat the index. And when I say the index, I simply mean, right, take an index like the S&P 500, which just in a very boring way, just takes the top 500 company, puts them in an index, and then anyone anywhere can buy that fund. Nothing sexy about it. If tomorrow one of those companies starts doing bad, they kick the company out, put a new one in. You do not need to do anything. You do not need to do any research about any of those companies. Your financial advisors, who have really, really smart people, business degrees and MBAs, not one of them can beat the market. So where to put your money is also important. I want to go back to Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton invests in a company called the South Sea in 1720. And by June of that year, he looked like a genius. He had gotten really rich. Here's the rest of that story.
You know, he was in, the bubble went up, he made a lot of money, and then he sold and he was happy with himself. But guess what? The stock kept going up and up and up. All his friends were making money, and then he couldn't take it any longer. And he bought back in again, right at the top, and got completely crushed and went bankrupt. So I can calculate the motion of the stars, but not the madness of people.
I could calculate the motions of the heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people. By Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton learned a lesson so that you do not have to never, ever buy an individual stock. No one is good at it. The professionals at these firms are not good at it. The genius Isaac Newton is not good at it. You do not need to take that kind of risk. So if being rich is money that you haven't spent, then we must also focus on the spending part of that equation. Contrary to what you've been told, money can in fact buy happiness. Yes, 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 you heard me. Money can buy happiness, but there's a caveat. If the source of your unhappiness is physical, money can fix it. For example, if you live in a really bad neighborhood, I've lived in a really bad neighborhood. You know, one of those neighborhoods where, you know, you're scared to go walk to your car because you might get shot. Well, if you start to make a little bit more money and you move out of that neighborhood, damn right you're going to be happy. Money can solve those kinds of problems. You need to use money to remove physical friction. But now let's say you now move to this nicer neighborhood, and you get to this neighborhood with your beat up old car, and you're driving around, and all your neighbors are staring at you. At least you think they're staring at you, because we all think people just care about our lives. And you start to feel some sort of way. And you look around and you notice that the neighbors are all driving these nicer cars, and you say to yourself, I can use money to fix that. I am going to go buy a Mercedes. Well, this is when they say money can't buy happiness. That's what they're talking about, because the source of your happiness is not physical. The source of your happiness is in between your ears. It's psychological. And when you try to use money to fix those problems, it's a very good way to have less and less and less money. A friend of mine worked at McDonald's for many, many, many years. She rose up in the ranks and is there for about 30 years. Later in her life, she got terminally ill. This woman hardly ever took a vacation. You know, she followed Charlie Munger's advice of never buying anything without a coupon, even when she had lots of money in her bank account. She decides that, you know, she's going to leave her wealth to her daughter. She had about $700,000. Now, keep in mind, she had an adult daughter who was college educated, smart, upstanding member of society. When her daughter got the money, after my mom died. She decided what she was going to do with the money was buy all of her friends Harley Davidsons, take them on these vacations, and really have a good time with this group of friends she had. 3 months later, she was broke and none of her friends were talking to her. You have to make sure you spend money on the things that can actually bring you joy. Most people who spend money going broke, they actually do not have fun doing it. There is no pleasure in trying to look good for someone else. There is no pleasure in constantly keeping up with the Joneses. Any pleasure or whatever you get is temporary. And it's a great way to lose your wealth. You know, this is true whether you have $10,000 or the $700,000 example I gave, or $10 million. Cornelius Vanderbilt left his heirs $300 million, depending on inflation in today's dollars. And 50 years later, all of it was gone. And they had no fun doing it. Here is the rest of that incredible story.
It was split and divided up between two sons. The first, Cornelius II, died managing the railroad after only 7 years. The second, William II, took over and decided to retire early. This is where the fortune went off the rails. Pun intended. William Vanderbilt spent money on yachts, thoroughbred horses, an expensive art collection, and 10 mansions on Manhattan's Fifth Avenue. There was also a 146,000-acre estate built by another Vanderbilt brother, a summer home in Rhode Island, and the philanthropy. William gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to the YMCA, Columbia University, his own Vanderbilt University, and Vanderbilt Clinic, and gave $1 million to tenement houses in New York. The Vanderbilt's net savings reached $0 gained by the end of William's reign, leaving the fortune stagnant at $200 million. As William said, inherited wealth is a real handicap to happiness. Or, as the late great rapper Biggie Smalls said, mo' money, mo' problems.
You can judge the Vanderbilts all you want, but I don't. We're all human. If Isaac Newton wasn't good at it, if the Vanderbilts weren't good at it, what are the chances you will be good at it? So what do you do instead? You do not trust yourself. Assume that if you have cash in your account, if you get an inheritance, if you get anything, you will find a good reason to spend it. So take the decision out of your hands. Pay yourself first. Put the money not just in a savings account that you're constantly transferring, put it in a way, in a place that you cannot touch. I put all the cash I want to put away that I still want to keep liquid, I don't want to invest, I put it in a treasury account. You know why I do this? Well, have you ever tried to buy treasuries, US treasuries? It's on this ugly website called Treasury Direct. At the time of my recording, interest rates are pretty decent, so you should, if you have some money, actually go buy some. But when you get to the site looks like, one of those old Craigslist sites, if you were old enough? Like, the site was built in 1997, and somebody decided this is the peak, this is how good the internet is going to be, and we're not going to touch it again. It is a horrible site. There's no app, none of that. And God forbid, if I ever needed my money, it better be an emergency. Because there is no friendly customer service or an app to hit the transfer. No. I believe they make you send something called a fax. You put it on carrier pigeon, right? You have to, right, do some sign language. They make it hard. And that's how I like it. Because you know what? If they made it easy, I'm going to get a call from, you know, some old friend who is in trouble. There's always something that would touch that money. So now I have created this barrier for myself because I do not trust myself. If Isaac Newton couldn't figure it out, neither can I. I do not trust myself. So I've put these barriers in place to ensure that I do not touch that money. The man who eats lobster every day doesn't think lobster is very special. You just try it. You pick your favorite food, steak. You keep eating every day. It's not going to be special anymore. There's a quote by William Dawson that says, "The man who can buy anything he covets without any consultation with his banker values nothing that he buys." End quote. And that man is going to spend his money without getting any pleasure out of it. So what is being rich? What is being wealthy? I think you need to define that for yourself. The best definition for me, though, is being wealthy is simply the ability to wake up every day with the freedom to do whatever the hell you damn well please. That's how I define it. And you can achieve that at any number that allows you to do that. I'll go back to the definition of wealth again. This one's by Morgan Housel. You've seen the theme here. He says, and I quote, "Wealth is simply unspent money." We have been on quite the journey. We started this conversation on the very first episode, making it clear that we have one God in this country. And his name is the Almighty Dollar. Then we made it clear that there is no escaping the Almighty Dollar. If you even try, it may cost you your freedom. And then we started talking about the skills involved in getting your hands on some money, keeping that money, and last but not least, getting wealthy and staying wealthy. I think about the skills involved in money is no different than the skills involved in mountain climbing. When you start mountain climbing, you start at the bottom of the mountain. And on your way up, more than anything else, you need strength. Ooh, but as you go on, what do you notice? People start turning around because they can't handle it. Because you need a different set of skills as you go higher up the mountain. You now need not just your strength, but you need endurance. And if you are one of the few and you persevere and you get to the very top, what happens at the top? More and more people begin to run back down. They are in a hurry to get back down. They cannot handle being at the top. The reason they cannot handle being at the top is because the air at the very top is so thin and only the very few can handle it. You need one set of skill when you're at the bottom of the mountain trying to get your hands on some of that dollar. You need another set of skills to learn how to keep most of what you make and to begin to get rich. And my gosh, when you get to the top and now you are rich or wealthy, however you may define it, you need yet a different set of skill. Because the air at the very top is very thin. And only few survive up there. Thank you for being on this journey. I hope you have learned some invaluable insights from these four episodes. And I look forward to having you on another series.